With me today is Laura Sandquist. She graduated from the University of Minnesota with a Doctor of Nursing Practice degree in May of 2012 with a dual specialty in integrative health and healing, and as well as an adult and geriatric nurse practitioner. She has been working for the last year in Touchstone Mental Health, where she provides integrative health consulting to Touchstone's clients. So, Laura, can you tell me a little bit about yourself and the clinical setting you work in?
Yeah, so the clinical setting that I work in is extremely unique. I'm in an independent, I guess you would say, health and wellness center that is associated with Touchstone Mental Health, or technically owned by Touchstone Mental Health. But as you can tell from my background, I'm not a psychiatric nurse practitioner. So it's unique for me to be associated with a mental health organization. But that was actually intentional. The director of the program, Lori Knudsen, decided to look for an adult geriatric nurse practitioner who would focus a lot more on the physical health and how to integrate that with the mental health. And when I was in the DNP program, I did additional training in functional medicine through a fellowship. And what functional medicine does that's really beautiful is allow you to look at the whole person. And so that mental health and physical health are not separated at all. So I kind of see myself as a role that's in the middle of, let's say, a psychiatric nurse practitioner or psychiatrist and primary care. So I help to bridge those two worlds together. And in my role, I feel like I don't necessarily even look at specific diagnoses. I'm really just trying to take in the whole picture of the client, especially their lifestyle. And that's really what informs what I do with them. And so my practice is actually focused on lifestyle and health promotion. So the things that I will focus on are nutrition and sleep, physical activity, the mind-body connection and stress, their relationships, their environment, including are they smoking and drinking and using any chemicals, their purpose and their connection to spirituality. So it's kind of taking this health promotion holistic picture. And what else is unique about my role is my visits currently are an hour and a half for the initial. So I really get to dig deep with people. And then follow-ups are 60 minutes. So this is a new, unique role and model that I'm playing in this practice.
Tell me how you would define integrative mental health.
So how I define integrative mental health is really the idea that you are integrating everything about that person as you consider their mental health diagnosis. But what I really try to do is not focus on that mental health diagnosis, because I see so much physical issues as well, and then looking into like their spirituality and their environment and relationships. So to me, it's like this big web that's all interconnected. And so when I'm integrating, I'm just like integrating everything. And I almost don't even think of it as integrative mental health. I just think of it as integrative health. And within integrative health, I think there's a lot of integration among practitioners. So actually on my team, I have an integrative dietitian, a fitness specialist, a health coach, and an acupuncturist. And so we work together. And then also outside of our team, we're working with the psychiatrists and the primary care providers and other nurse practitioners, social workers. I mean, the list goes on and on. So it's like, how do you integrate everything?
Tell me a little bit about your experience in delivering care to the population you work with. How has that been going?
Well, I have always had an interest in psychology. In particular, in my undergrad, I did do a minor in psychology. And for fun, I would read psychology type books. And I always had a fascination with psychoneuroimmunology, which is now kind of psychoneurogastroimmunology. It keeps expanding because we realize this is all connected together. And when I was a nurse intern back in 2005, I did an entire summer on a psychiatric inpatient unit at Abbott Northwestern Hospital. So I really was exposed to more of the really intense acute care at that point, which has actually been one of the greatest informers of what I do now, because I was able to see kind of the worst, illness and how that expresses itself. So that's informational. And then I worked as a nurse for 6 years at Abbott Northwestern, and I was on a medical floor, but of course, there's always a mental illness, psychiatric component to everybody. I think we all have a little bit of mental illness, whether that's a little bit of stress or anxiety.
Sure.
So I've just always kind of viewed that everybody has some spectrum of that, just because it's a part of health. And I have found with the clients I work with, there's always some anxiety or a little bit of depression on occasion, or just like the stress. But my experience in working with this population has been fabulous. Like, I'm surprised, actually, because when I came into it, I thought, you know, how is this going to work? I'm not a psychiatric nurse practitioner. This is not what I've been trained to do. But I found when I used the functional medicine philosophy, which is I practiced that in a private clinic for a year before I was at Touchstone, which
sure.
really helped to form my foundations.
Mm-hmm.
But I just come into the appointments and I see people as people and not their diagnosis. And I really just try to separate from that.
Yeah.
And I find that the population I work with, they are some of the most intelligent, insightful, like, just beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, I think, are extremely gifted just in their ability to just sense the world around them
sure.
and have empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times that actually brings on a lot of their symptoms of anxiety and depression is because they are so empathetic and compassionate, and they can feel like the energies of those around them if you look at it from like an energy component.
Sure.
And sometimes it's just really hard to know how to deal with that ability. So I find them to be a wonderful group to work with. And most of the people have been, you know, that have come to the center have been highly motivated and engaged. And I feel like they seem to feel very empowered, kind of taking a little bit of different approach that doesn't necessarily focus so much on their diagnosis.
Functional medicine. Can
mm-hmm.
you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. So functional medicine is, I like to think of it as a philosophy,
okay.
as like how you approach care. And the easiest way I explain it is instead of labeling a diagnosis and just treating it with a medication that is assigned to that diagnosis,
sure.
you instead say, okay, we have all of these symptoms, and you need to kind of look at all of the symptoms, not just one system. Like, I
okay.
can't just look at the gut symptoms. I can't just look at the mental health symptoms. But it's like, well, why does this person have all these symptoms? Like, what is the underlying root cause?
Sure.
And can we tie that back to lifestyle, nutrition, nutrient deficiencies? So it's really all about asking the why is it happening and really investigating and digging in and understanding like the physiology. And I think the more that we're learning in science just about the microbiome of the gut and how these nutritional deficiencies might impact health overall, there's just so many opportunities of things you can do when you're looking at it from this functional perspective, and the idea that if you impact one system of the body, you can actually impact other systems. So it's like a web.
Yeah.
Instead of traditionally in medicine where we like to break the body into systems where it's like you see your neurologist for your neurology, your cardiologist for your cardiology.
Yeah.
Let's instead look at how this is all linked together. And in functional medicine, the saying is all disease begins in the gut.
Yeah.
And that's where your most 80% of your immune system is. And so it's like if we can help people with their digestion and their nutrition and their blood sugar balance, those are my three foundations, a lot of times you can have beneficial impacts on the rest of the symptoms that are going on.
So it's a very kind of a whole systems approach to health,
mm-hmm.
where you avoid to try to compartmentalize health too much, and well-being
yes.
starts to be one thing, not made up of many different things.
Yes,
is
exactly.
That,
yep, that's a great summary.
When we think about your work with clients, and a lot of them have severe and persistent mental
mm-hmm.
illness, right, or SPMI,
yep.
how do they react to this approach?
A lot of them actually cry in a good way. I have found I've had lots of people cry on the first appointment in the office. And I think it's because a lot of people with severe and persistent mental illness who maybe have been on medications for many years, they come to me, a lot of them have come to me and said, you know, this is all that's left. Like, I've been told there's nothing more that can be done to help me,
mm-hmm.
whether that's with their mental health symptoms and with their physical health. And 100% of the time people have both.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of been told, you've tried every med, you know, eat well and exercise more is kind of what they've been told. And it's like, well, what does that even really mean? And they feel lost and trapped. And so what I like to do is really like take their story that they tell me on that first visit and show them how a lot of what they're talking about is all connected, interconnected. And then let's look at all these possibilities of things we can do when we look at it from this integrative, holistic perspective that will actually help you. And people just seem to feel very empowered and energized by the idea that they can actually do some of this for themselves and they don't need a practitioner to like give them a medication or tell them what to do. It's all about educating them and allowing them to take, you know, power back with their health. And then I always say, too, it's not, this isn't magic, you know, it's not, with medicine, a lot of times you can get a pretty quick response.
Yeah.
But with this whole lifestyle and this whole approach, I tell them, this is going to be a journey.
Yeah.
And my job is to kind of, to partner with you on that journey. And it's probably going to take at least 3 to 6 months to really start to see some improvement.
Yeah.
And also, it's going to take a lot of work on their part and dedication. Yeah. But at this point, when I see people, a lot of them are ready. They're looking for that. And they're like, I'm ready to start making these changes, especially when someone believes they can do that.
What do you feel the compliance or adherence rates are to your recommendations compared to the quote-unquote normal population is?
I don't know if I could give you an exact percentage.
Sure.
But I do know that adherence seems to actually be pretty high for most people. I think there are some that come for that first visit, they get excited, they fall off, and the time is not ready for them.
Yeah.
But for those where like the time is ready and this is what they want, the adherence is pretty good because most of the quote-unquote interventions that we're doing are things that we decide together.
Yeah.
And that's something I always say in the appointment. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Like, I want to know what do you want. And I use a lot of health coaching and motivational interviewing to get them to tell me what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And I am blown away sometimes by what people will do. Like, I'm not even sure it's going to work. And I'm like, wow. And then if it's too much, then that's okay. Like, I always approach it with a lot of compassion and just like, okay, you know, you're not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
Or like a lot of times people will go gung-ho and then they fall off and it's like, well, that's normal.
Yeah.
That's a normal part of change. So I just tell them, you're just normal and it's okay. But the point is just keep going and keep trying. And I'm going to be here for you each and every time. So I'm not giving up on you. So sometimes I feel like I have to hold that for them until they can get there themselves. And I think, too, a lot of times we do really small changes, you know? So it's not like we ask them to do these crazy programs.
Sure.
That sometimes happens in functional medicine.
Yeah.
It can be like, instead of drinking 10 Mountain Dews a day, let's have you drink 6 and have more water.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's really, really easy things, and sometimes it's a lot more than that.
This really fits well with like the concepts of recovery and empowerment and not forcing things on people, but being an active collaborator with them as kind of the leader of their own healthcare team.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's that therapeutic partnership. And I think it's actually the relationship that is the most important point. Because when I look back and or try to think about like what do I quote unquote do, that's the most important thing. And it's really just showing up in each visit and giving them some safe space to work on these things and talk through these things and kind of in providing them that unconditional support. So it's all about the relationship, really, more than what I do. And I think that's been a big learning for me is to realize it's not about what I do or tell someone to do and what they do. It's more about who I am as the practitioner. And I think that correlates a lot with functional medicine and holistic and an integrative approach where you have to take care of yourself and kind of be present and available with people. And it's that presence that really has an impact, which is kind of the core of nursing, is to have that nursing presence.
Yeah. Has there been a time where you feel this approach is not a good fit for a client? Or are you always able to kind of accommodate within this framework to different people's needs?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are times when I feel like someone is not ready for this approach. Mm. And some people might not ever be ready. I think that there has to be a certain amount of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
But I also try to always believe that, like, no matter where someone is at, there's always something that can be helpful. And so there are people I work with where you maybe don't see the results that, like, I would like to see. But then I have to remind myself it's really not about me.
Yeah.
And if they keep coming back, there must be something that's shifting in them, even though you can't really always see the obvious outward things. So there's always something you can do, even if it's small, and something they can work on. But I do find that there are some people where they might, A, not be interested in this, or there's just too much other stuff going on.
Yeah.
Maybe they're too acute,
where
that's not helpful. And I'm really trying to be careful about that, even with, like, physical or mental health issues that are more acute. It's like medicine is time for the acute issues.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing is more dealing with chronic issues and lifestyle-related issues. So I always am sure to, like, get people the help they need if it's more of an acute situation.
How have you seen this approach benefit your clients in the last year that you've been working at Touchstone?
Yeah, so the biggest benefits that we see for people are improvement in, like, fatigue and mood, energy levels, and just feeling more, like, vital. They kind of have a shift in them where they are just taking more control in their lives. Mm-hmm. We've seen BMIs reduced. You know, a lot of people easily lose, you know, like, 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Hemoglobin A1Cs, we've had drops in those by a couple points, helping people to eat better. Yeah. And these are even people who've done other diabetes education before, but because we're coming at it from, like, a functional perspective and a different nutritional perspective, it has a lot more impact. Digestive issues is another one. We see huge improvements, you know, gas and bloating and diarrhea, constipation. And it's just, we're just using a little bit of different approach and some supplements and diet ideas that just are easy and they work.
Yeah.
So overall, I think it's improvements in what I call the chronic unwell.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's a lot of chronic unwell in our culture where people just don't feel that great.
Right.
Headaches and joint aches and this and pain is another one. We see a big improvement in. And a lot of that comes with the acupuncturist too.
Right.
That's very beneficial. So, and I can't even tell you what exactly makes all those differences. To me, it's like all of it is impacting it a little bit. And it works. What I know is that it works. It can work.
And especially when I think it's interesting what you're saying about the, for example, the losing a few pounds or, you know, changes in the A1C. And I mean, I don't know if when we think about that, we realize that might mean a few extra years for people.
Yep.
And not only extra years, but extra quality to whatever years there are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the difference can be huge. It can
be
the difference between spending 2 years in the hospital or 2 years, you know, playing in your cabin up north or whatever it is.
Yep, exactly.
So it's sometimes difficult to think when we think about these little changes, how much of a dramatic impact they can have, especially with the health status of people, especially if you talk about people suffering from severe and persistent mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about an example or two where this approach was helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. So one that I'm thinking of is a 55-year-old Hispanic, like, Native American woman.
Okay.
And she has about, I'm not going to be able to list them all, but, you know, like, 14 diagnoses, you know, anxiety and depression are her major psychiatric diagnoses. But then she also had type 2 diabetes, asthma, obesity, heart failure, high blood pressure, restless leg syndrome, sleep apnea, you know, kind of like the normal, like, pretty typical of what you might see. She's on 24 medications, I remember that, including Coumadin because she had atrial fibrillation.
Yeah.
So she presented just wanting to have more energy. That was her complaint. She says, I don't have enough energy even to clean my house.
Yeah.
She's only 55. Her daughter, who's 22, lives with her,
along
with her granddaughter. She's on disability. She has maybe $200 a month to spend on groceries.
Yeah.
So at this point, she's really hopeless. You know, like, I don't know what else to do. And if I go anywhere, I just get another pill. And I have 24 of those already, and I just don't want any more pills.
Yeah.
And so she became really engaged with us. And what we worked on with her was, like, a sleep routine, like, easy things, like, just sleep hygiene. You know, she was, you know, staying up till 4 a.m, keeping her TV on, her granddaughter in her bed. So it's like, okay, we're going to work on sleep.
Yeah.
Nutrition. I mean, she's type 2 diabetic, hemoglobin A1C of 10 when she came in. She didn't know what a carbohydrate was, and she'd had diabetes for a while.
Yeah.
And she told me, she's like, yeah, my doctor keeps telling me not to eat more carbs. And I just say, okay. But she's like, I have no idea what a carb is. And then she's like,
So 10 is pretty high, right?
10 is pretty high,
it's
yeah.
It's supposed to be what?
Less than 6 would be ideal. I mean, if you're diabetic, you can get away with less than 7, supposedly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, yeah, 10's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Not managed well. She's on insulin that she has not seen an endocrinologist. And, you know, she's just seen all these specialists. Her care is very fragmented. So I felt like my role in that was to help kind of point her in the right direction. I did do a lot of help coordinating care with her primary care provider, who was really receptive to have extra help to work on the lifestyle component.
Yeah.
And she saw our dietitian, she saw our fitness specialist and acupuncturist. The acupuncturist was for chronic knee pain, which actually went away with acupuncture, which was phenomenal. In between the dietitian and I, we both talk a lot about nutrition. Her hemoglobin A1C went down to 7.9 in about 7 months, which is pretty significant to have that big of a drop. And it was amazing what she was doing. Our dietitian helps people connect with food resources.
Sure.
And that's a big part of what we do, because we know, you know, it's hard to afford a healthy diet, for sure, on $200 a month.
Yep.
So we helped her navigate that, and she was doing amazing things. Taught her how to do some cooking, just eating regularly instead of once a day. I mean, all of these are just such simple things that she started to do, but, like, no one was really coaching her and helping her to do that.
Yeah.
I also coached her a lot with her relationship with her daughter. There was a lot of poor boundaries happening there.
Okay.
So a couple of our visits were really focusing on that relationship. So it's funny how sometimes my visits seem like not medical at all. So they're kind of like whatever that person needs at that moment.
Yeah.
And it, just by the end of her care, though, at 7 months, you know, we decided, okay, your wellness plan is kind of complete. You've made a lot of progress. You know how to cook for yourself. I mean, her restless legs were resolved. She had lost about 9 pounds. You know, the hemoglobin A1C was 10 down to 7.9.
Yeah.
She was sleeping through the night, like 9 hours a night. And when she came in, she was sleeping maybe a few hours a night in horrible sleep.
Yeah.
Now she's sleeping. She said her fatigue had resolved. And I did do a couple of supplements with her, like just a higher quality multivitamin, and increased her vitamin D.
They were affordable?
Yes, those were affordable for her. She just
So
we picked one that she could afford, and she decided to put that into her budget.
Okay.
Because I was able to get her some free samples for a while.
Sure.
And within a month, she noticed the impact with activated B vitamins, I think, is what really helped her.
Okay.
And she said, I want to have those. And so she worked that into her budget, which was wonderful. So her fatigue was better, and the relationship with her daughter was so much better. But I think part of that was she was so much more resilient. So now she could handle these stressors better and communicate better. And she called this whole plan her oneness plan.
Yeah.
And that was what she named it for herself.
Yeah.
And she's like, I feel amazing. Like, I have balance now. I have energy. She's like, and I have, she's said she found a new sense of purpose.
Yeah.
Where before she thought she needed to go back to work to find a new sense of purpose. But
sure.
she's like, now I'm seeing my purpose with my grandkids, and I'm teaching my grandkids how to be healthy. And so it was an amazing transformation.
Yeah.
During the middle of it, I think I thought, is anything happening here? Like, you know, you kind of
the
same thing over and over, and you're like, but then if you look, step back and look at big picture, over those 7 months, you know, her life has changed, and she's only 55. And she went off her ranitidine for reflux.
Okay.
And she also had to decrease 2 of her blood pressure medications in half because her blood pressure had become so low from her weight loss and starting to exercise more consistently. And that, I just roughly calculated that, and that's like a $3,000 in medication savings in just a year, just from taking those meds off.
Well,
so it's pretty cool.
Well, and also we see some of the blood pressure medications can actually increase symptoms of depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So often, if it's possible to reduce or simplify, that seems to be optimal.
Yeah.
How has your collaboration been with other providers? It seems like you don't necessarily take over the primary care provider role.
Nope.
You kind of consult on the consult on different things
mm-hmm.
and keep on seeing people, but they keep on getting their meds filled
yep.
from other providers, things like
exactly.
that. How has that collaboration gone? How do both people respond?
Well, a lot of times I will reach out to the primary care providers
okay.
if there's been like significant change or like something needs to be addressed
sure.
or if the client says, you know, I work really closely with my primary care and I want them to know.
Yeah.
Some people tell me, you know, I don't really see my primary care maybe
sure.
once a year, so
yeah.
it's not as big of a deal to
sure.
communicate.
Yeah.
So it really is individualized, everything, and
yeah.
how much communication and collaboration happens. I have found most that I've actually heard any response from. I
yeah.
mean, a lot of times I think I send these letters and I never hear anything, so I don't know. Like, I
yeah.
don't get a lot of feedback. The clients are like, they're primary care providers telling me, oh, that's great, keep doing that,
okay.
but don't really engage them a lot in exactly what is it.
Sure.
And then there are some who are like, awesome, do it. And
yeah.
like, they might not fully understand what we're doing sometimes,
right,
but
right.
they're just like, I think I would imagine if I was in the primary care role, it would be overwhelming to try to address lifestyle
yeah.
in your short visits,
yeah.
which is exactly why I don't work in primary care, because
yeah.
I know it would be overwhelming for me
yeah.
Because I'm so passionate about this.
Yeah.
So I think that they might see it as like a beneficial, helpful partnership. And I try to be very careful about not stepping on their toes.
Sure.
And like, if I was a primary care provider, I don't want somebody adjusting the meds or doing that. So I'm just very respectful of what is their role and what is my role. And same with, you know, psychiatry. I'm never going to touch a psychiatric medication.
Right.
But I do collaborate with psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners when I need to as well. The lack of resources is extremely challenging. As a practitioner, in my previous practice, it was private practice in Edina. And so if you say, do this lab test, get this supplement, eat
yeah.
this food, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
But now we've placed a whole other barrier
yeah.
of people getting access, which is really frustrating,
mm-hmm.
honestly, because a lot of this, I believe some of the supplements should be covered by insurance because
sure.
they are so effective
yeah.
and they help keep you off other things that are more expensive.
Sure.
But that's another story
yeah.
for another day.
Yeah.
But so how I work with that is try to not focus so much on supplements
yeah.
As you could in functional medicine. And how do you get that from food? And looking at places like Aldi's and even at the food shelf, just teaching people how to pick the foods. Because
sure.
what the dietitian and I have found is there's things out there
yeah.
if you know how to look for it.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the problem is they just don't even know what they're looking for.
Right.
And once you give them the knowledge, I have also found that people are extremely resourceful.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they are the most, when you're in that low income category, sometimes you become the most resourceful people out there because
yeah.
you have learned how to survive
yeah.
and where to find those resources. So now if you give them the education of what to look for and they feel empowered, they will go out and find those things and do those things,
yeah.
many of them, if they're ready to do that. So part of it is just like knowing the community resources and working with that, which has been a learning process. I also do anything I can to get samples and work with samples. With probiotics, I do get a bunch of samples from the company, which has been life-saving
yeah.
For me, just because it can help give them an impact. But then even if they can't afford probiotics ongoing or insurance won't cover them, then we can focus on the foods, but at least they've seen the results. Also, I found with Medicaid, they do cover things like vitamin D and fish oil and magnesium, so
okay.
I am able to use those in that population.
Yeah.
And then as far as, you know, coverage for services, I think that's huge, like who
yes.
has access
yes.
to this. And right now at Touchstone, we have coverage through Hennepin County for people who have Metropolitan Health Plan Cornerstone
okay.
and Hennepin Health.
Okay.
So that's actually about 10,000 people who are low income who have access to our services.
Okay.
So me, the dietitian, fitness specialist, and gym membership, and the acupuncturist, if they have some sort of chronic pain, can all be covered. So our services being covered, that takes a big barrier.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
if they can just get in, then we can really focus on simple things. And that's exactly yeah. what we've had to do, is just pull back and be like, what are the simple things we can do? And I think that can be challenging as a practitioner sometimes because you want to be fancy and use technology or yes. use fancy pills. And it's like
yes.
sometimes that's not what you need. Like actually most of the time it's not. You don't need the fancy stuff. You just keep it simple.
When you talk about these different lifestyle factors with people, for example, with depression,
mm-hmm.
And I know you talked about the acuity before,
mm-hmm.
but somebody who's there in your office and has significant symptoms of depression, how do you approach them with these little things?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes that can be a hard sell, I can
mm-hmm.
imagine.
Yeah, because I think a lot of times with depression, people don't then have the motivation to want to do a lot of this.
Sure.
And so that's really the challenge that I face, I guess, is people will say, yeah, that sounds really great, but I don't even know if I can do that or take the energy up to do that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it comes down to, I think, more of that coaching that goes on. And the time that I have to do that is
okay.
really important, because I think if I didn't have the time to really help them get to the core of something,
yeah.
it would be really hard to get anything from the visit. So the time is actually really helpful. And I find for a lot of people, if they're not ready for nutrition or physical activity, because those can actually be harder changes.
Yes.
They seem easy, but they're like the harder.
Yeah.
Sometimes we go more for like, okay, let's talk about spirituality. Let's talk about purpose. Let's like engage you on like a deeper level.
Yes.
And I find that it's a divide actually. Like some people, they feel more comfortable starting with like the nutrition and the physical activity and more of the lifestyle type changes. And some people can't go there because I feel like the spirituality and purpose are not quite connected.
Right.
So in people who are having more of the depression, for example,
yeah.
a lot of times we actually have to, if it's more severe, we do
yeah.
have to start more in that spirituality purpose discussion
yeah.
and then try to get some inspiration around that. That will then get them to the place where they'll be ready for more of the lifestyle changes. But I find that those conversations can be really helpful,
yeah.
just incorporating that. When I say spirituality, it's, you know, obviously bigger than religion, but it's more just like a connection to something greater, a connection to gratitude.
Sense of purpose, I guess.
Yeah, and purpose fits
yeah.
kind of hand in hand with that, too.
You had mentioned earlier a little bit about having or approaching this with an attitude of non-judgment and self-empathy
mm-hmm.
when it comes to working with people, especially, let's say, with depression, who have a lot of shame and guilt or even other mental illness where they, for example, schizophrenia, where they might be very disorganized at times mm-hmm. and have a hard time doing some of these things, not because they so choose, but because of the nature of their illness, kind of the effects the illness has on brain and thought processes
mm-hmm.
and neurotransmitters and all that. So can you tell me a little bit about how you kind of approach that or work with that?
Sure. So, you know, the place of being non-judgmental, I think, can be challenging to get there. But I feel like in the setting that I'm in and the fact that I'm not under a lot of time pressures,
yeah.
it really actually allows for a lot more of that, like, scatteredness to happen or
yeah.
like wherever that
sure.
person is. I feel like you just meet them there, because I see that all the time, you know, kind of like the piles of papers and
yeah.
just disorganized and kind of not tracking, you
yeah.
know, what we're saying
yeah.
and kind of having to repeat things that we've done before. And
yeah.
and I guess I always just have to go back to like, okay, I'm just just love.
yeah.
Just love and let them be who they are
yeah.
and affirm them a
yeah.
lot. Be like, yep. Yeah, that's okay. That's
yeah.
just where you're at. So it's just kind of creating that safe space. And I think that's something that, you know, it really takes a lot of self-awareness to do that.
Yeah.
And I credit, you know, the DMP and Integrative Health Program for really cultivating that. I think
sure.
that's one thing that program really does is help you grow in your self-awareness.
Yeah.
And I took the first health coaching class that I took. Amazing what I learned about myself and just how to be in the present moment and to allow all of that chaos to happen but still stay like grounded and calm. Like it's kind of all about yourself not getting wrapped up into their chaotic and
sure.
disorganization and just being like, let it happen and it's okay, and being able to just then take that chaos and pull something concrete out of it that they can solidly hold on to and take. Like, I see that's my role in those situations when it's kind of chaotic, to kind of look at the big picture and say, okay, what's important, most important, and here's the next easy step, and to gently kind of guide them.
The issue that comes sometimes up is then when you start to have some of these lifestyle conversations with people, of course, it can be difficult in the acute phase and maybe not always appropriate, but when some level of stability has been reached and you start having these conversations, there's a very fine line between being supportive and then almost sounding judgmental or asking them to do things or suggesting them to do things they would if they could. So how do you kind of approach that delicate balance? Going for improvement in certain lifestyle areas, but still not coming off as kind of judgmental or as like, well, that's easy for you to say with your high income and your college education, but, you know, try living in where I live and with the income I have and try to do the same and see how you fare. Mm-hmm. Kind of that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally can see that. And I actually was concerned, you know, when I started working with people that they might not respond well because they can say, oh, yeah, it's easy for you to do all this stuff because of your education and you have money and all these things.
Yeah, what we were thinking about is that difficulty of talking about these lifestyle changes to people that are often in a difficult situation to execute them.
Mm-hmm.
And not coming off as judgmental or kind of hoity-toity, if you will, you know, making suggestions that seem out of reach for people because of the economical or logistical restrictions they may face.
Yes, and I think that this goes back to really paying attention to making sure that they're doing what they're ready and wanting to do and not my agenda.
Yeah.
So it's really like stepping away from your own agenda on things, which I think can be hard to do. And I think sometimes like in the medical world, we're used to kind of having an agenda, like this is my prescription for you. This is our plan. This is the goal that you're going to do. And we actually avoid using the word goal because it's so overused.
Yeah.
And it's more like, okay, this is kind of your intention, but it's really about what you need and what you want. Not what I want and what my expectation would be.
Sure.
So it just is really meeting people where they're at and then allowing them to set those small things and then being extremely encouraging of them when they meet those really small goals.
Yeah.
Even though in my own head I might be like, well, that was easy.
Yeah.
But I totally understand that what's easy for me might not be easy for somebody else. So it's just having that awareness that it's going to be different.
Is there a kind of a lesson you've learned that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson I've learned is that really that gift of empowerment that you can give people and not limiting them by what you think they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pattern I think I've seen now working from this perspective that sometimes in the medical world, we can be very judgmental and we put limits on people based on what we judge they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we protect people, I think subconsciously, just don't even challenge them to do certain things because we think they can't do that because of their income or they won't be interested. Like you said, they won't be interested in integrative therapies or this just doesn't apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can't make those judgments and instead offer those people with severe and persistent mental illness or anyone the same thing you would offer anyone, like whether their income level is low or high.
Yeah.
It's like we shouldn't be changing what we do or what we think people can do based on that.
Yeah.
'Cause I think sometimes people get limited by our expectations.
Yeah.
And they will only live up to maybe what you expect. So if you kind of remove those and just say, I believe that you are capable of whatever, and I don't even know what your limits are. I just want to give you this opportunity to really take charge of your health and let's see what you can do.
Yeah.
So I think not being afraid to use more of this integrative approach with anyone and just removing those judgments.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. It's been great.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.